Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Welcome back to another Brick in the Wall. Joining us now is James Cook, Senior Director of America's Retail Research at JLL, and a man whose job is basically to explain why some malls are thriving while others are turning into medical centers, call centers, or pickleball courts. James flew in from the US to open the SAPOA conference with a big picture view of global retail. And when he's not doing that, he's hosting one of the world's best retail podcasts, Where We Buy. James, thanks so much for joining us. Just talk to me about that opening scene set at SAPOA today on the global state of retail. Let's start there. I mean, if you had to distill the mood of global retail real estate in 2025 into a theme, what would it be?
Oh my goodness, you're really putting me on the spot here. I talked for 45 minutes about a variety of topics. I would say that my biggest takeaway is that it depends. Things are very varied, little trick of the tongue there, very varied depending on what region you're in right now. So just as one example of that, I'll talk about the construction of new shopping centers. So in my home country of the USA, that's a very small percentage compared to what it was, say, 20 years ago. Mm. We used to have a lot of new construction, and folks decided around 2008, 2009 during the Great Recession that they would stop building shopping centers. And they really haven't built many of them in the US since then. So because of that, we still have leasing activity, so the vacancy rate keeps going down, but we don't have a significant amount of new construction. So that's one way that it can be. And then you compare that with a country like China, which, you know, since 2007, they've just been building more and more shopping centers every year. And so rental rates in China, as an example, have been coming down in the past few years, whereas in the US, they're going up. Now, neither of these are right or wrong, but they're just completely different. So I guess my point is it really depends on the country and even the city that you're in.
Yeah, geography certainly rules. And, you know, broadly speaking, we do see Asia really leading when it comes to luxury shopping. We see global brands, global luxury retailers, our own Richemont doing exceptionally well in those markets as well. Would you say America overinvested in retail in that boom period? And do you feel maybe investors got burnt and there's maybe a hesitancy to go back in?
Oh my gosh, we definitely overinvested in retail. Now we're talking about specifically that bubble of, up through 2007 or so, where folks kind of lost sight of reality a little bit, I want to say, and we're building many more shopping centers and shopping malls than each individual city could support. So a lot of folks got burnt. A lot of properties went back to the banks, and it took a long time for that negativity to burn through the system. I would say we're well beyond that. Mm. And I would say that in the US, new construction, it still exists, but it's very cautious.
But tell me, James, if you think of America, it's a massive country. I mean, it could be more than one country. It's very diverse, a high standard of living, and fairly wealthy people, you know, in quite a few pockets of it. So you'd think there's demand for retail and futuristic retail. So I'm just wondering, where are these people shopping? Are they shopping online? I mean, has the online shopping thing just keep skyrocketing the growth there in the States? Or perhaps are we heading to a new path where maybe people are saying, actually, I want bricks and mortar and I want to shop on my feet?
So to be clear, all of that space that was built, it's been absorbed. So it's not standing vacant. I think that's a misnomer that a lot of people have, a misunderstanding about US retail, is that we have a lot of vacant retail. In fact, our vacancy rate is just a little bit above 4%, which is the lowest vacancy rate in the world that I'm aware of. And leasing activity is continuing. Folks are still buying in stores. The penetration of e-commerce is still going up, but my feeling is it's going to be plateauing soon because it's very expensive to deliver goods to people's homes. And right now, consumers are really, they're focused on saving money. And the cheapest way to buy something is if you buy it in the store. So I think I'm still very positive about the outlook for brick and mortar retail in the US, but really around the world.
And just to build on that, James, I mean, I think post-pandemic, experiential retail was really billed as the savior of the physical store. Are you seeing that promise bear out in America or globally, or is the e-commerce tide still pulling the strongest?
Well, I would say what we call, and I'm not sure what you call it outside of the US, but like daily needs retail, which is shopping, you know, for your groceries and, you know, maybe to get your hair cut, things like that. That is the backbone of shopping center leasing activity. Also, quick service restaurants is another big one in the US. So the I like to think of that experiential retail is maybe the salt or the pepper that you add to the dish that gives it its good flavor. You don't need too much of it. And I think it's been very successful. And we're seeing, you know, in the US and really around the world, there's a, you know, in each market, there's a handful of what I would call class A shopping destinations where you've got the brands that you can't find anywhere else. You've got the great restaurants and all of that. And they're not the places that people go to every day necessarily, but we're thankful that we have, you know, a sprinkling of these across each market.
And if you were to just look at capital flows into retail and how they might be evolving or changing, are sovereign funds or pension funds and private equity players rethinking their allocations? You know, what are the capital flows telling you?
So a few years ago, when the pandemic really hit, and there was a big sense of, oh my goodness, no one's ever going to go back to the office again. And I'm not sure if that was true around the world, but in many markets it was.
Certainly, yeah.
And yeah. So a lot of those dollars, those investment dollars, turned to look for something else. And in the United States, it was often grocery anchored shopping centers. That seemed like a very safe bet. It's built around that daily needs retail. So for a few years there, sort of starting in 2021, we had a real boom in additional investment dollars in retail real estate in the US. Now that has cooled down a bit. At this point, I would say that institutional investors and sovereign wealth funds, their allocations are set, and I don't see further shifting to retail. But we certainly have a renewed understanding for most of my career, and my career started in 1999. For most of my career, retail was not that hot in terms of investment, other than that build up to the before the boom, before the bust. But there was a moment there where people said, oh my goodness, you know, I want to invest, retail's cool again. So that was very exciting for us.
And I mean, if you look here at Sapoa, I'm sure you've had a chance to be on the ground here and kind of kick the bricks at the conference. When you look at the South African retail landscape, we've got a high mall density. We love our malls in South Africa. We've got pretty resilient footfall, but weaker consumer spending, obviously, than the US. How does our market compare with the trends that you're tracking in the US and elsewhere?
So I know very little about South Africa. Everything I know, I've picked up in my short visit here. So I can't say very many intelligent things. I would imagine that just in terms of per capita, like retail square footage per capita, we probably have more square footage per capita in the US than you do in South Africa. We've probably got more shopping malls per capita, I would imagine. But honestly, yeah, I don't know. I can't say anything really smart about the South African market, unfortunately.
Yeah, but no, it's interesting because I think many in South Africa, we feel we're outliers. Retail still feels very mall-centric here. But from your global perspective, is that unusual or does it mirror markets elsewhere that, you know, I've been to Poland, they love their malls in Poland as well. There are a few other markets that kind of almost, I would say, mirror South Africa from a retail perspective.
Oh, good question. Okay, so I would say that the US is no longer a mall-centric retail space, although people still do go to those Class A malls. They just don't go as much as they used to. I think about Asia as an example. Many countries in Asia are very mall-centric. Also, the Middle East is another great example of a place that absolutely very mall-centric. So there's certainly analogs out there.
So places like Dubai, I suppose China, I mean, are they just people that haven't necessarily lived through that mall culture for as long as perhaps the Western world and now they're doing it? Or is it that their products are so good and what's sold there is so much variety that people have to be there?
Well, I think that I think it is about newness, perhaps, and I am caveat here, not an expert on the Asian or Middle Eastern consumer, but I think there is some newness. And there's also the fact that the mall may be the only place where you can go to a certain type of store or dine at a certain type of restaurant. And in a market like the US, there are restaurants fantastic restaurants that aren't in malls. And there are very high-end, cool stores that aren't in malls. So consumers maybe don't feel like they have to go to the mall the way they might in other countries.
Mm. And, you know, you've been tracking retail since the late 90s, as you said. And looking back, what's the most surprising retail reinvention or innovation that you've witnessed in your career? You know, in South Africa, one of the most pleasing for me personally was just when we digitized paying for parking, and you now just have an app and you drive through the boom rather than having to deal with physical tickets and never being able to get change at the machine. It was just one of the most infuriating things of visiting a mall. But from your perspective, what have been some of the most interesting reinventions or innovations you've seen?
I think it's sort of this, it's interesting. Every year you get some small digital advancement or some new technology, and they just add up over time. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I'm living in the future. I think digital payment has just really taken on in the US. So everybody's using, you know, for example, Apple Pay to pay for everything. So, you know, you can leave the house and not even have to have your wallet with you as long as you've got your phone. But another big thing, advancement, is click and collect. So you buy online and then you can pick it up in the store if you don't want to go, if you don't want to wait to have it shipped to you. I think that's big. Grocery delivery has become very big. That blew up during the pandemic. Yeah. I guess everything old is new again with that one. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's any one thing. Because when I started in the business, people were saying, well, online is going to kill all physical retail.
Yeah.
And so that was my mentality for years. And I've just been pleasantly surprised how brick and mortar retail is just so, continues to be so relevant.
Yeah, brick and mortar is dead. Long live brick and mortar, you could quite easily say. Now, you know, not just for your research, but as I said in the introduction, for hosting Where We Buy, it's won awards. It clearly has an audience that loves retail storytelling. How has podcasting changed the way you think and communicate about retail?
That word storytelling, that's what it's all about. When I started in the business, and I've been a lifelong researcher, so my main thing is tracking numbers and telling people about data. When I started in the business, it was all about numbers. But I realized somewhere along the line that the best parts of the business were hearing the stories from the people who were doing the business. And almost, I want to say 8 years ago, maybe, I decided, hey, I talk to people all the time. I should just record these conversations and make a podcast out of it. Yeah. And that, it's been life-changing. I mean, I'm not overstating it. I've talked to so many amazing people because of it and had so many great conversations and also gotten so many great opportunities that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah. No, speaking of where you buy and the people you speak to, I'm just wondering if, as people have got more choice for goods all over the world, and as more people become educated and aspirational and get ideas, do they become less familiar with certain goods and want to try other things? You know, is there a lot of brand loyalty, or do we live in an even more competitive kind of retail landscape across the world?
It's almost like both things at once. It's interesting. I travel enough and talk to enough people globally that they are almost in a sea of new brands popping up all the time. So on the one hand, people are always hopping on the new thing. For example, in the US, the blind box collectibles phenomenon and Labubu, and I don't even know if you know what I'm talking about. And Pop Mart is where you buy them, and they're popping up all over the US. Like, there's all this new stuff. And so people talk about that, but they also cling to what they know and love. And you talk to people around the world and they still cling to those like rock solid brands and shopping places too. And it might be the old school, I don't know, like in New York, like Macy's at Herald Square, that big flagship that people have been going to forever, or Harrods in London. Those things still have resonance. And I feel like in this time of so much clutter, I think brand is more important than ever.
Fantastic. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. The global retail tour done and dusted in under 15 minutes. Only James Cook could do that. Thank you very much, James Cook of JLL, for sharing what's happening in the US and the global retail scene here on Classic Business.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.